Bickley and Murata, Social Studies.
I look forward to it every day, and it's here.
Hey.
Social Studies with Sarah Cazell. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, how are we doing today, guys?
Hello, Sarah.
Good. Okay, we have some fantastic questions today via our Jarrett Carlin.
We'll be the judge of that.
Fair enough. You guys always are, even if we don't ask you to. All right, we're starting with looking ahead to the month of December. It's obviously been not a great stretch for the Arizona Cardinals, not a great stretch for ASU football because they just haven't been able to play. And then, of course, the NBA gets started 3 weeks from today. So we are asking you, which potential December sports event do you think is most likely? The Arizona Cardinals go 4-0. The Phoenix Suns play a Christmas Day game, or ASU football plays and beats Arizona in the Territorial Cup.
Can I start on this one, Bick?
Please,
yeah, go ahead.
I want to actually intertwine this into another feature that we do on the show, Start, Sit, Cut. I'm starting ASU football playing and beating Arizona. I'm sitting Suns play a Christmas Day game, and I'm cutting the Cardinals go 4-0.
Yeah. the latter I don't think is going to happen. Yeah, I think ASU playing and beating Arizona is the most likely thing to happen.
Yeah, and I will say this. The Suns' Twitter account's been very active today with the rumblings that the schedule's coming out today. They attached a video from ballislife.com, 2 minutes of Devin Booker getting buckets. And they said, who wouldn't want to wake up on the 25th, open presents, and watch these buckets on television? They also quoted lyrics from Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You, and they changed it, All I Want for Christmas Is for the Suns to Have a Game on Christmas Day. So maybe they know something. And I saw somebody suggest maybe a Suns versus Dallas Mavericks Christmas Day matchup.
Okay.
Maybe.
Okay.
I see where you're going with that.
Yes,
yeah.
I think we all do. Okay.
I'd sign off on that.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Since we're not going to be able to be with our families that day anyway, might as well watch the Suns play the Mavericks.
Yeah. Okay, so I voted for Suns playing on Christmas Day as well because I saw the tweets that you were referring to.
Okay.
It feels like the Suns wouldn't be doing that unless they knew that something was going to happen.
Sense.
Yeah, why
sense.
Give yourself the opportunity to have egg on your face?
Exactly, yeah. Yes. So I voted for the Suns playing Christmas Day game, a Christmas Day game, and so did 50% of our voters. That's the leading vote getter right now, the Suns playing on Christmas Day. 39% say ASU football plays and beats Arizona. If it were just ASU beats Arizona, yeah, that feels like a lot.
That's why I didn't have to play
that
first.
Way, yeah.
Yes, but because playing the game is part of it, I don't feel like I can vote for that. Yeah. 11% said the Cardinals go 4-0 in the month of December. Who are these people?
And I said earlier, it would be a nice way to spend the holidays, to get a Suns primetime game on Christmas Day to be part of that party, and then to have the Cardinals play the day after Christmas against the 49ers as part of a Saturday tripleheader. That'll be cool.
Mm. Yeah.
Love to sit in front of my TV with my Chinese food and just watch that game.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Right.
Christmas Day.
Sounds great. All right, moving on to our next question, something that it feels like at least every day or every week for the last 5 weeks, we've been asking who the heck is the best team in the NFC, because it changes every single week, or at least our perception does every week. So here are three teams and an other for you to vote on. Is it the Packers, the best team in the NFC, the Saints, the Seahawks, or somebody else? Fill in the blank.
I will, at this very point in time, I'm going to go ahead and vote for the Green Bay Packers right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's really by the thinnest of margins.
Yeah. Right now, I'd vote for the Saints.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of how it fell with our voters, too. Those are the top two vote getters by far. 45% going with Green Bay, 37% going with New Orleans, 15% voting for the Seahawks, and then 4% say other, and just about every response is, ask me again next week. AZ Man of Steel says, pick a name out of a hat. Yeah, that's kind of how we've been doing it here.
Yeah, it changes pretty much every week.
Yeah. All right, so something we've been talking about yesterday and today, the San Francisco 49ers, they are coming to the Valley. They are making State Farm Stadium their home for this week and next week, practicing and playing here in the Valley due to restrictions in Santa Clara County. So we are asking, what is your best story about your worst roommate or worst ever living situation?
Can roommate and spouse be lumped together? No, I'm just
joking.
Do it.
For the record,
I'm not going down that road.
You couldn't see it, but Jarrett started to shake his head before the words even escaped your mouth because he knew.
I was mouthing. I knew he was going to say that.
I had a college roommate and shared. It was a two-bedroom apartment, so there was two guys in each bedroom. And I moved out after a semester, but I'm pretty sure he went the whole academic year without changing his sheet. Never experiencing the underrated joy.
He voted for Jarrett's team.
Yeah.
Except actually once he had clean sheets, but
that one time
when
to
he
start
moved
off
in,
with.
I guess.
And that that was we're still friends. It's not that big of a deal. I've been pretty lucky on that front.
Okay. How about you, Beck?
The first apartment I ever lived in as a broke young person. It was a place in Rolling Meadows, Illinois. We called it Rolling Ghettos. And one day I happened to see a cockroach run across the wall. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. I've heard about these things. I went out and got a roach motel and I put it in my cabinet.
Okay.
Opened it up an hour later and the thing was from top to bottom.
Oh.
I was living in a cockroach infested apartment building. Yeah, I got out as soon as possible. It was disgusting. I cannot unsee what I saw that day when I opened the cabinets and looked at that roach motel and just, ugh.
Yeah, you were living in their apartment.
I was.
It sounds like.
That's exactly right.
We got some great answers to this question.
Oh my gosh, we
do. We?
Any favorites for you, Vinny? I've got a good one.
Several.
Yeah, there's several good responses. Okay, let me start with one from Jim Dively. He says, my buddy and I signed a 12-month lease on a Friday, moved in the following weekend. He tells me 2 days after we moved in, he had eloped after knowing this woman for less than a month. So I come home after work to, as he puts it, this chick sitting on the stairs waiting to be let in.
Wow.
We love a surprise third roommate, don't we?
Wow. That is...
That's incredible.
That's not great.
We have... Gosh, this
Jim
one's...
said they're also still together.
Yes. Happy for
love
them.
Love wins in the end.
Yeah.
Amen. Terry Mickelson says, a roommate and I were scheduled to move out at the end of the month. He decided to leave a few days early. He moved out while I was gone. He pooped in a shoebox, put the box near a vent, and turned the heat up.
Oh, come on.
On his way out.
Come on.
Why? He says, my possessions are probably still there 35 years later.
Gross. I hope somebody turned off the heat.
Poop fest.
Yo, that story at Jared's attention, I'll tell you that much.
Man, this is delicious poop.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, we have some vile responses. I once had a roommate. She was fantastic, but her boyfriend was an absolute loser. And I don't like calling people a loser, but he really was one.
What a loser.
What a loser.
Is this your story, Sarah?
Yeah, this is my story.
Okay, tell us.
And I used to, my first year out of college, I lived super close to where I worked. So if I wanted to come home for lunch on some days, I could. So I came home in the middle of the day once just to make myself some lunch and head back to the office.
Uh-huh.
And I walk in and this boyfriend who does not live with us, but kind of just moved in with us, he was sitting on the couch in absolutely nothing but his boxers and turns around when I walk in and he goes, oh, you're here. And I say, I live here. And he seemed so surprised and still didn't get it. Because he didn't leave for probably another 2 months consecutively. I finally had to have a chat with my delightful roommate, whom I still love.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just...
And they're still together, too?
No, she got married last weekend to somebody who is not this guy, and I could not be happier for her. So it ended well for all of us, except for that idiot who's probably still there on the couch.
At least he was wearing boxers.
He's still there on the couch. Uh-huh.
Kiernan responded with, roommate didn't pay me for 2 months in a row, and I chucked his couch over our balcony.
There we go, Kiernan.
But Kiernan, that hurts you, too. Now you got nowhere to sit, man.
Kiernan tapped into the rage tree is what he did.
I chucked his couch over the balcony, right? No!
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's good stuff. Do we want to get to the final question? Who has the worst mustache of all time?
Oh, boy.
This was because we were talking about Mitch Hedberg, Larry Fitzgerald, how they have sort of mustaches that you don't necessarily notice because they're not the most prominent.
Yeah.
So it made me think who
has
the worst.
You're not sure what to call them. Yeah. Do we have nominees for worst mustache of all time?
Rhett Reese put forth Dave Wanstead. That's classic. That's great. I covered that guy.
It's also because it felt like he was a knockoff Mike Ditka.
Dave Wanstead, when he took over the Bears, this is a true story, he was so overrun by anxiety. He had never been head coach before. He was Jimmy Johnson's kind of lieutenant, right? He started smoking, and he would, like, chain smoke on the way to practice every day, and he would have to stop and throw up on his way. He was just a nervous wreck. Much better than the television studio.
We got so many great responses.
We really did.
There's one that popped into my head. Because there's one guy historically on planet Earth whose mustache style will likely never be replicated again.
I think I know who we're talking about.
He was kind of a big deal over in Germany for a while.
Yeah.
But for people not named Hitler, such great responses.
Yes.
Dominic said Antonio Brown's blonde dyed mustache.
Yes.
That was bad.
Awful.
Adam Morrison.
Another
you had a great answer, Sarah.
I did. Dario Saric. Sorry, Dario.
The first one that came to my mind was Larry Bird when he grew the blonde mustache.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was blonde. Kip Dynamite got a response.
Justin Clement left. I'm forgetting the name of this guy, but the Oregon football trainer, the one who has the
handlebar.
Yes, the handlebar.
Just screaming and jumping up and down. He's so annoying, that dude.
I don't think that's the worst mustache of all time. I think it is an obnoxious one, but of all time, I don't know.
From Mojik, if you don't know who he is, you got to look on this Twitter thread. Ronnie the limo driver from the Howard Stern show has a dark dyed mustache that looks like the Batman logo, and it's just dreadful.
Oh, that's funny.
Andrew Franchek says Jarrett's mom.
Oh, jeez.
My goodness gracious.
Yeah. You leave Mrs. Carlin out of this.
Yeah.
She asked for nothing of the sort. All right, there we go. There's another rousing edition.
Did we all learn stuff about sports today?
We certainly did.
We did. And we're going to learn more. Social studies every day at 1. Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, guys.
Coming up next, the question is out there. Does Kyler Murray need to run for the Cardinals offense to be successful? We'll hear thoughts from one of the guys blocking for him next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Dan Bickley, Vince Murata.
Bickley and Murata,
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
He loves to run. I think that gets him into the flow of the game as well. But the way teams are playing, they're literally taking that away. If a back is offset, they're putting two guys on the backside, literally waiting on them. So, you know, I think in the National Football League, you realize when you start playing long enough, people will find a way to take certain things away from you, and you got to find a way to still find ways to win in spite of. The thing is, we've had opportunities to win games in a variety of ways, and we've lost games in a variety of ways. I think for us moving forward, we got to find a way to win games offensively in a way that it doesn't matter whether Kyler runs for 5 yards or Kyler runs for, you know, 100 yards. If KD and Chase run for 200 yards or they run for 50 yards, or we throw for, you know, 300 or we, you know, throw for 150, we have to find ways to win games. It doesn't matter how you get it done. It just has to get done.
So offensive tackle Kelvin Beachum of the Arizona Cardinals talking to the media today on that burning question that's out there, Bick, especially after the last two losses for the Arizona Cardinals, and that is, does Kyler Murray have to run for them to be successful? You hear the admission. Kelvin Beachum feels like Kyler Murray needs that to get into the flow of the game, but immediately followed it up by saying they are literally taking that away from us right now.
Yeah.
From a design run standpoint on RPOs and read option type plays. Now, that does not eliminate Kyler Murray's ability to make plays with his legs on a scramble, on a straight drop back, protection breaks down, he can still gash you for 30 or 40 yards at any time. We haven't seen that either.
Yeah, no, my thoughts on that are very simple. When you listen to the postgame Zoom press conference on Sunday, Kyler Murray was, I don't know whether indignant is the right word, but he was very defensive when asked about, does the team need you to run to be successful? And you almost get the feeling that sometimes he's kind of like, what else do I need to do for us to be successful? How much do you have to rely on me to do this as well as that? And I just get that vibe every now and again. And I think this is the reality the Cardinals are facing in the RPO situations now. Nobody is sliding with the running back. They're all watching Kyler Murray. So Kyler Murray can't run with the ball in those situations. A week earlier in that Seattle game, remember he held on to the ball when instead of giving it to Kenyon Drake, when he should have given it to Kenyon. Mm-hmm. But one of the defenders was King. Remember that key play?
Yes.
And Kenyon Drake had a first down, but Kyler Murray didn't give it to him. And it was just kind of like, that was the start of it, where it was like every time in these RPOs, they're waiting on me. So if you're running RPOs now, you gotta give the ball to the running backs. And if those plays are not successful, then stop running them. Because defenses are not allowing now Kyler Murray to read that and take off with the ball. So it's just one of many adjustments Cliff Kingsbury has to make. They've got to reinvent themselves in a way and find other things that they can be really good at, because the things that made them special, they have been taken away.
Yeah, I agree. And Cliff Kingsbury was asked about the subject of RPOs yesterday, whether or not the defenses are keyed in on to what Kyler Murray's doing.
I'm not sure if figure out is the right word. They obviously had a good plan and wanted to try and, you know, contain him in the running game. And when that happens, we got to be more productive with the backs and getting yards that way. And I thought at times we were, but just not consistent enough in that run game.
And if you look at the last group of losses, the last three games that the Cardinals have lost, Brian Flores had a good plan, even though the Cardinals were productive offensively in that game. High scoring game, couldn't get it done. A lot was made about the second time around against Seattle. Cardinals obviously really gashed that Seattle defense, led by Ken Norton Jr. and Pete Carroll the first time around. Second time around, you're going to see some adjustments. There was some different personnel on the field for Seattle. Much better buttoned-up defensive performance. But, you know, a good defensive mind and Pete Carroll behind it. Last week, it was Bill Belichick. And people have pointed to, okay, Brandon Staley, he's the defensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Rams going into this week's game. Certainly doesn't jump off any list of the top defensive coordinators. In fact, he's in his first year in that position. But that hasn't slowed that Rams defense down too much.
No.
When you have the personnel that he has to work with, and there's a lot of playmakers led by Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, we'll find out if pedigree and experience had a factor in kind of handcuffing Kyler Murray a little bit, mm-hmm. or if this is a problem that's going to linger on until the Cardinals, on their offensive side of things, figure something out moving forward.
Yeah, listen, and so where do you go with it? I do think that there's something to be said for Kyler Murray needing one of those runs to kind of get himself going a little bit, for whatever that means. So I don't know how you can do it or where you do it, but maybe you just do it to check that box. And then I just think what you need to do now, Vinny, is you need to develop plays that counter blitzes, that attack blitzing, because you've got to make teams pay for the additional pressure they're bringing on Kyler Murray. At the beginning of the season, teams were not coming after him because they were afraid of him running through containment and then having nothing but real estate in front of him. They realized that defense did not work. And so what they're doing now is a variety of things. A, lots more blitzes in the last 4 weeks. You can't ask a team to stop blitzing. All you can do is make them pay for it, and that is what will make them stop. You got to find ways to gash them with big plays. They're going to have to throw the ball over the top. They've been playing inside a very dull rectangle the last couple of weeks. Very predictable. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to not lose their nerve in late-game situations. They're going to have to score touchdowns and not kick field goals and just get back to doing things at a high level. Their offensive line has got to stop with the penalties. And hopefully you can find a higher level of offense. If not, you're going to win two games at most.
Yeah, and that's not going to be the the recipe for success moving forward for the Cardinals to win two games. They have to find a way to get past that.
Yeah, I think if they want to be a playoff team, you've got to get to 9 and maybe 10, but I think 9 is going to be the number for the 7th seed. But two of those games are against the Rams and the other is against the 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, did you see that great interplay between the 49ers and the Cardinals?
I did not.
Okay, the 49ers on Twitter basically tweeted out their new home, and they put a picture of State Farm Stadium, and they tweeted out, "We've always liked the color scheme at Arizona Cardinals," and they wink, right? Okay. The Cardinals responded with the following: "Just a few basic rules about the house. If there's any food you like, we suggest you put your name on it or it'll be thrown out by us. And don't ever, ever, ever touch our drum set."
With any part of your body.
Yeah, right. Which is a line from Step Brothers, I think?
Yeah.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah. And an image from Step Brothers.
Okay. All right.
That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I like it. Coming up next, we'll get further thoughts. Phoenix Suns in training camp today. Monty Williams, the head coach, spoke to the media today. We'll share some of what he said straight ahead. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Firstly, I think there's this negative connotation with demanding from your teammates. Like, I think all great players, all good players, in one way or another, demand from their team. I was around Tim Duncan for years, and he demanded of his teammates. He may have done it differently, but when you see a guy like Tim in the gym every day working like he does, it puts a lot of pressure on you to step it up. Some guys do it that way. Some guys do it verbally, and some guys do it with action. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think as we all grow in these roles, we figure out how to demand, and I think that's an area where Chris has matured and grown and understands the personalities of the people that he plays with, but I don't think it's a bad thing.
Monty Williams again talking about one of the newest Phoenix Suns, Chris Paul, as training camp gets underway. We are 3 weeks away from the beginning of NBA season.
Mm-hmm.
It's here. It's only 110 days. Starting today, using today's date, Bick, 110 days since the Suns last played a game.
Yeah. Stunning to me that the NBA champion was playing all the way through. What was the end of the NBA finals, Vinny?
It was October 27th,
okay,
I believe.
October, yeah, end of October, and some teams ducked out in the middle of March. While everything else was kind of staggered, so there's been a wild disparity between rest and inaction and craziness. And
I was
here
off
we
a
go
little
again.
Bit. It was a little earlier. October 11th was the last game of the NBA Finals.
Okay.
So,
all right.
But still, I mean, talk about the quick turnaround.
Oh, yeah.
It's unlike anything that that we've seen before. And the Suns, one of the storylines about the Suns before. I'm fighting off a sneeze here.
Uh-oh.
Oh, victory. I did it.
Oh, you did it.
One of the storylines around the Suns before this offseason, where they made all these exciting moves, was what they did in Orlando. And the core of that team is coming back this year, that team that went 8-0 in Orlando. And the question is, how much can you cut and paste from that Orlando experience to the new season? Here's Monty Williams on that subject.
We went into Orlando with the idea of getting better and navigating uncertainty. And we're going to have to do the same thing. I think the Marines have a creed that's like adapt, overcome, and improvise. Maybe not in that order, but I think we have to be able to implement some of that as we go forward. Everybody's dealing with the same thing. our guys are excited to play. As I said, our guys have been in the gym for 3 months. We had to reschedule the gym times because Mikhail and Cam and both Cams and Javon, those guys would have come every day. That gives you a level of excitement as you go into a lot of what will be unknown for a lot of us or all of us.
Yeah, you love to hear that stuff of work ethic with guys, and I think some of the guys that Monty mentioned there, they were standing out in the uncertain time before the bubble was finalized and the Suns started holding workouts over the summer at Veterans Memorial Coliseum. A lot of those guys were showing up. I think you'll see more of that buy-in with somebody like Chris Paul as a team leader on this team.
Yeah. I think that that's what's going to be the really interesting thing going forward. As we said earlier, what does Chris Paul's leadership look like and how is it being received? Monty Williams is right that all great players are demanding of their teammates. If that should have been lesson number one, if you watched The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan 10-part documentary. It was true of Tim Duncan. It's true of Jimmy Butler. It's true of a lot of guys. But what does change is the way those kind of players are received by lesser teammates. And that's the big question. But the beauty of this, first of all, is when you look at it from an investment standpoint, you say to yourself, all right, if Devin Booker is getting antsy, this checks that box. There's no way it couldn't. And so we have now done our due diligence by Devin Booker.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to the DeAndre Ayton question, again, he needs a guy in the room to really push him hard, to let the coach do the nurturing and the teaching. And now he's got that guy. Whether he accepts it or whether he doesn't is going to ultimately say a lot about DeAndre Ayton, but it's also going to give the Suns everything they need to know about whether to reinvest with him or to invest even more heavily into him after the next 2 years. So he's going to help you keep Devin Booker happy, and he's going to also make the decision on DeAndre Ayton very simple a couple years from now.
I agree with that. I also found this interesting. There was a panel piece on ESPN.com. One of the questions asked to the NBA panel, five respondents, which newcomer will have the biggest impact on his team? Three of the five respondents chose Chris Paul in Phoenix. Tim McMahon wrote, the Suns became a team worth taking seriously in the West as soon as they traded for Paul. It would be a major disappointment if Phoenix doesn't end its decade-long playoff drought. Paul's arrival gives Devin Booker a chance to prove he's a legitimate superstar, not just a major talent who puts up big numbers on a bad team. Amen to killing that narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Royce Young also voted for Chris Paul. The Suns can build on the bubble momentum of their 8-0 run in Orlando, but adding Paul to a young developing group could be the sustaining boost they need. And here's an interesting one from Kevin Pelton, who also picked Chris Paul. If CP3 is healthy and his new teammates welcome him as a veteran leader, something All-Star Devin Booker has already signed off on as part of recruiting him for a trade, the Suns can benefit from having one of the greatest point guards in NBA history, much as the Oklahoma City Thunder did last season. And if you want to use the Oklahoma City Thunder as the most recent example of what Chris Paul can do,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of proof. Not many people expected the Thunder to be a playoff team. They were the 5 seed in the West.
Yep.
Not to say they were devoid of talent, but I like the Suns' roster way better than I liked Oklahoma City's going into last year.
And the lesson of the OKC thing is if you put Chris Paul in charge of a group, he's going to make the collective better than the individual pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a great leader, that's what Steve Nash did. It's what a great leader does. But that also involves making Chris Paul the leader of your basketball team. Devin Booker's got to be cool with that. And that's going to be the big thing, Vinny. It's because Devin Booker is a very ambitious guy. We know that.
Yes. We've talked about the effects. All right, what is Chris Paul? How does he rub off on Devin Booker? What is the effect he has on DeAndre Ayton, some of the other younger players who are, you know, trying to figure things out at the NBA level? He obviously expedites that, but Monty Williams talked about something else that Chris Paul can influence with this team.
Chris has an ability to make everything around him better. I witnessed it as a rookie head coach You know, I had him and David West, Willie Green, Emeka Okafor, Jared Jack, Trevor Ariza, Marco. Like, I had guys like that as a rookie head coach. And after that year, people thought I could coach. And then Chris and David left, and we didn't re-sign Willie. And all of a sudden, the plays that I was drawing up didn't work out as well. And a lot of that was Chris.
Yeah, it makes Monty Williams a better coach, too. And kind of a follow-up on that, too. Monty Williams reflecting on where he is now as a head coach in the NBA, as opposed to the last time he had Chris Paul on a roster.
I think that we both have grown a lot. I think we both were really headstrong, too, back then. I was walking around like a dictator, ready to cut somebody's head off, trying to implement my way and my program. And I don't think I was really good at allowing him to, you know, do what the great ones do. There were times where I felt like I took the paintbrush out of his hand, and I thought we could have been even better on that team looking back. And I was talking to him about that. I've shared that with Willie Green, who played on that team, about how I may have gotten in the way a ton on that team. And so I'm hopeful that the 10 years apart have helped us both grow in many areas of our life.
I love hearing comments like that from coaches that get a second chance at doing it. And I find it refreshing to say, to hear somebody look back and say, what was I doing?
Well,
you know, you get the opportunity. You obviously want to make the most of it and make the biggest impact, but it doesn't always work out that way. And to learn from your mistakes is in any walk of life is key. And it sounds like Monty's done that.
Yeah. Young leaders don't know the nuances of the craft, and you don't until you try to lead, and then you do, and then you learn the pitfalls, and then you learn the folly of trying to treat everyone the same way, and you learn lessons, and you become a lot better. What I loved about what he just said there was the interspersing of laughter that happened a couple of different times as he remembered these stories. And he must have been remembering them fondly because of the reaction it was engendering, or maybe the fact that he knows he's got this guy and he gets a chance to do this thing. He gets to run it back with Chris Paul. And yeah, it's cool, man. I hope on the court this looks as good as it does on paper.
Yes, but going back, you know, it's only been a year since Monty Williams has been in town. Can you picture him being a dictator type leader of an NBA team? I have a hard time picturing that.
No,
what he's displayed here,
right? Yeah, he probably had to learn a lot of lessons.
Yeah, that's the growth he's talking about. Have you subscribed to the Bickley and Murata podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android. You'll never miss any of the show. It's the Bickley and Murata podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealers. Coming up next, did a recently fired NFL head coach's burner Twitter account get exposed? There's a lot of proof that says yes. We'll tell you about that and more next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata, song of the day.
A long December, and there's reason to believe maybe this year will be better than the last.
You keep believing that, Adam Duritz.
Happy December 1, everybody. May the last month of the year be more profitable and enjoyable and just smooth.
Than the last?
No more 11? BS, please. Yeah, than the last 11.
Yeesh.
It's been quite a grind.
Yes, it has. Yeah. But here
we
are.
Year's taking a chunk out of my backside, I'll tell you that much.
We are 11/12 out of through the year.
Yeah. Yep.
This interminable slog of a year.
Oh.
That's Counting Crows, thanks to... that is Counting Crows, right?
Yep.
Okay. Song of the Day is brought to you by Sonic. Head to Sonic now because happy hour starts at 2 o'clock. Drive into your nearest Sonic location for half-price drinks and slushes. I got a funny story, which I know is going to spur a funny story from you, Bick, because it came up earlier in the show.
All right.
There's a man from Taiwan who was able to purchase the new PlayStation 5. He got it for cheap, but unfortunately, he basically told his wife that it was an air purifier. Wife found out it's not an air purifier, made him get rid of it.
No.
This article, which I believe is from a Taiwanese site, the buyer, who identifies himself as Jin Wu on Facebook, said he managed to find a reseller who was willing to sell off his PS5 at a very reasonable price. After agreeing to meet up in person to complete the transaction, Wu gave the reseller a call. Voice on the phone was that of a woman who doesn't sound like the type to play video games. The price of the PS5 was also very cheap, and she sounded eager to sell it off. When the reseller arrived to meet me, I was surprised to find a middle-aged man, and I knew at first glance that he played video games. So anyway, he takes it home, and the wife... he has to tell the wife that it's an air filter, so it'll go over. And that didn't go over very well.
That's funny.
I know you've got a thing about toy scalpers at Christmas time.
Well, yeah, this is as somebody who loves Christmas, as many people do, and as somebody who has really gone overboard throughout the years to make it magical for my kids, as many parents do, you know what I'm talking about here. There is nothing worse than the feeling of scrambling to get an in-demand toy / game / Christmas holiday present for your child when every store doesn't have them. Now, I've done this before, where you every day call Toys R Us, Best Buy, Target. Well, every day, is it in? No, it's not. Is it in? No, it's not. Is it in? Hey, yeah, we just got a couple in. And you get in your car and you scream. There's nothing worse than that stress. So this is what gets me mad. So the 11-year-old monster wants a PlayStation 5. Now, they're very pricey. Sony knew for
$500.
They're $500, and that's for the one that comes with I believe the discs. You can also get a digital where you download everything, and I think that one's less or that one's more. There's two different kinds, but they're both very expensive. And Sony's been planning this release forever, and yet they have quote unquote supply issues. Sure they do. They're inflating the value of it by making it scarce. Turning well-intentioned fathers into raving maniacs. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger and what's that dude?
Sinbad.
Sinbad.
Yeah. What
from
was the
Jingle
name of the
All
toy?
The Way.
Jingle All the Way. Toy?
It, oh, that was the, who was that guy?
He was like Action Man or something.
So I would like to say
Turbo Man.
So all toy scalpers at Christmas time, I understand the beauty of capitalism, but there is an extra level of purgatory waiting you.
Oh, I have a similar, not a recent one, but when my older son was young, this is going way back. Remember Tickle Me Elmos?
Oh, yeah.
There was a version of that, and I remember talking about it on the radio, like, I'd really like to get my son a Tickle Me Elmo. You can't find him anywhere. I get this call from basically an informant at the radio station. Hey, I got access to a Tickle Me Elmo. So I arranged this back alley meeting. This is like before cell phones. This back alley meeting, and I'm meeting up with a perfect stranger behind a strip mall.
That's what I'm talking about.
It was like a Tickle Me Elmo deal gone bad.
Right, right.
Hey, you want to pose for a picture with Elmo?
That's actual audio from that meeting. Yeah,
so,
I agree with you. If you're taking advantage,
yes,
shame.
Really. And to all the manufacturers who limit supply to create this crazy demand, shame on you. Why do you make it hard on well-intentioned parents?
Yeah, Vic, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Although he and his wife never touched a light switch for fear of being shocked, who was the first president to have electricity in the White House? Was it Ulysses S. Grant, Benjamin Harrison, Chester A. Arthur, or Andrew Johnson?
I will guess...
Do you want to use a lifeline?
No, I will guess. My answer, it's not Ulysses Grant. It's probably Benjamin Harrison.
Wow, it is. You wouldn't have even had to use ESPN's Mina Kimes as the lifeline. Did you see this?
No. Mina Kimes...
Celebrity Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Mina
celebrity
Kimes
chef
is on that?
David Chang was the contestant. That was his last question for $1 million, and Mina Kimes was his lifeline, and she got it right.
You're kidding
me. And I actually watched like the whole 4 minutes of the last question because he's going back and forth and he can't make up his mind on what he's going to do. And he finally just said, I'm going for it. And Mina Kimes gave him the correct answer. One time, Vinnie Joe trivia champion, Mina Kimes gave him the correct
answer. Now, were they friends? I assume they're friends.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know how they know each other, but they're both, I guess, L.A.
All celebrities know each other.
I think he has a podcast on The Ringer.
And does he?
I don't know if that's some kind of connection. But also, he didn't know the answer at all. Had no idea.
He didn't even think Benjamin Harrison was a president.
Right. Didn't even know. He's like, I knew there was William Henry Harrison. So he didn't know the answer at all. Mina, I always wonder on these phone-a-friends, don't they just Google it real quickly and give the answer? But I guess she didn't.
But you could. I'm sure you could.
They probably tell them not to, but I'm sure you could. So she gave an answer. She gave it like, I think it's Benjamin Harrison, like that.
And time is up immediately.
This was for $1 million or $32,000, and he just took a chance on it and went for it and won. The first celebrity ever.
Wow, sort of like your game show appearance, Jarrett.
Except for the end one part.
Well, let's face it, Jarrett is better as a game show contestant than he is as a game
host?
Show host.
Oh, come on.
Oh, wait, I forgot to load up that one question I wanted to ask you.
The mustache not a mustache thing went haywire because I had a clip, and then that clip led to another clip. Mm-hmm. So because I couldn't find the first clip, I couldn't play the second, and then it threw me all off. So I apologize for that.
It's your brand, dude. Yes. This is who you are.
This is a great story. Matt Patricia just gets fired by the Detroit Lions, right?
That is a great story. You're right.
This guy named Ben C., who tweets under the extra point FF, says, I'm 100% convinced this is Matt Patricia's burner. The account didn't tweet between September 4th and today. Which was yesterday. Look at the tweets and replies. All they follow are former current Lions, former current Pats, and Barstool Sports. The name is Eddie P. Lions Fan. Matt Patricia's middle name is Edward. So here's a sampling of it. Replying to a tweet, Coach Patricia did what he could with the roster Quinn gave him. Bob Quinn was the problem. So I dug deeper into this account. And there's great stuff like somebody says about the future of Matt Stafford. I want him back. And he responded, Matt Stafford needs the Lions need to move on. Matt Stafford is uncoachable. So there's all this proof that it's actually Matt Patricia, which is fantastic. I love that stuff. Yeah, here it is. Dave Burkett of he's a Lions beat writer. Matthew Stafford on his future in Detroit. I'll figure that out and talk about that later on. Eddie P. responds, Lions would be better moving off. Stafford is uncoachable, although he spelled it Stanford.
Wow.
follows Rob Gronkowski, Julian Edelman, the Patriots, Tom Brady. Now, it could be somebody just giving ample evidence that, hey, this is Matt Patricia's burner account, but it might be him. You never know.
It sure sounds like it might be. And what a bad look that is. If you're a sports executive, you got to have the cojones to sink or swim on what you believe in and what you do. Yeah. If you're creating a social media burner account to justify what you do and prop yourself up, lame.
Yeah, and he also responded, this Eddie P. Lions fan responded to a Barstool tweet that has a link to a story about Kaylee Cuoco, the actress, about getting ready for her new HBO show, The Flight Attendant. He just responded, she's so hot. Oh, I love stories like that when we find out burner accounts. Can't beat it. Thanks to Mike Sando for joining us. We appreciate his time. We appreciate you listening. Of course, Burns and Gambo are up next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Have a great day, everybody. We'll catch you tomorrow at 10.